Today's episode of the Ryan Russillo Podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network is brought to you by State Farm. Just like basketball, the game of life is unpredictable. Talk to a State Farm agent and get a teammate who can help you navigate the unexpected. I have some unexpected stats for you coming up a little bit later on. It's going to blow your mind. Today's podcast, by the way, is going to be brought to you by Kicking Ass, because no offense to the people that are non-ass kickers, but today's podcast is going to be great. Early prediction, and it's not already taped where I'm doing this. I'm saying it now. I'm a minute in, and that's how hot I feel right now. 33 seconds in. All right, so unpredictable game. Maybe just the Suns being undefeated. All right, let's keep it simple. Get a teammate who can help you navigate the unexpected. Talk to a State Farm agent today. And how about the good friends at Buffalo Wild Wings, Marty and Aaron, with their New England franchises. Shout out to the 802. Sports are finally back, and the only way to celebrate the return is with Buffalo Wild Wings, where the wings come in 24 sauces and seasonings. When you watch at home, make sure you watch with a wing bundle. Sports are back, and there's no better way to watch than Buffalo Wild Wings. The plan for today, a little bit of open, bunch of topics. Chris Holtmann, the head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes men's basketball team. We spent a lot of time talking college football. Not sure that I've helped at all, but we have. And I thought, hey, you know what? Considering everything the Big Ten is going through, which I think right now is sort of being unfairly criticized, and we'll get to some of that maybe a little bit later, but let's get a basketball guy's perspective on. So let's do that. Holtmann's been on the job a couple years. And then we have a new segment that's an old segment, but I'm bringing it back. We've talked to our branding people about titling. It used to be Stats to Impress the Ladies. Now it's just going to be Stats to Impress Other People. That's what we're going to do. Just everybody's involved. Very gender, you know, neutral on the whole stats thing. And then life advice at the very end, a little bit more rapid fire. But we start with, again, college football. I'll be brief because I think I've been, I don't know. It's not just repeating myself because some of the stuff isn't new, but concepts, theories, just the way I feel about certain things. So I don't want to keep going over and over and over it again. Anyway, as of now, I'll believe the SEC plays football when the ball is in the air on a Saturday night. So even though right now there's this angst of, wait, the South is going to do it. And it's just kind of like we had said, you could tell geographically, depending on which news source you watch, or maybe you watch a lot of them, it's very predictable which states may have been more ready to go compared to other states, depending on how that state was executing its regulations throughout this entire pandemic. And so a part of the angst from the Midwest and certainly the Pac-12 has been, well, if the SEC and the ACC and Big 12 and the Texas, Oklahoma's, like, you know, those guys are just going to go ahead and kick the football off, that puts us at a massive disadvantage. I have seen people that I like and that I respect saying how far this will put other teams, really other conferences, behind those conferences in the South. Hold off. I saw somebody use the death penalty, somebody I used to work with, and I'm like, are you serious? You really think that's going to happen? Now, to set this up further, say the SEC, ACC, Big 12 actually do play some version of a fall college football season, and, well, that means that one of those schools is going to win a title. Let's say the SEC just continues to win titles for the next five, three of the next five. That's not some ridiculous prediction. It's very well a reality without the pandemic. But say that happens, that'll at least give Big Ten and Pac-12 fans an excuse to be like, well, the only reason they're winning is because they played during the pandemic and we didn't. All right. But what I do know is that I think in the moment, like a lot of this stuff, it's a total overreaction. It is the Dallas Cowboys Stadium scoreboard reaction. What happens on third and 10 if the guy drops back and throws it to the scoreboard and it's a do-over? It never happens. No one ever had to worry about it, but we had problems. And I bring that example up as one of the best examples of time spent wasted on something that you didn't have to be worried about yet. Could there be a slight recruiting bump from the schools in the South if they play this fall? Yes. But to think that all of a sudden, all the kids that grew up loving Michigan, loving Ohio State, Penn State, Wisconsin, all the great Big Ten schools, and Nebraska, who, if they had gone back to the Big 12, were like, dude, we can do 7-5 here again. We're Nebraska. We could do that. And then all the West Coast kids who probably look at the South the way the South looks at the West Coast, being like, you know what? I'm just not a good fit. I have a hard time believing that every single good recruit all over the country that originally wasn't thinking about schools in the South is going to leave, and there's going to be this mass exodus from these geographical areas for high school talent. So I just don't buy that. Another thing that's actually more frustrating for me, and I'm not on the side that should be frustrated, but I'm trying to think of what other industries that exist where the people that did it are told by the people that never did it that they're wrong. Now you're like, wait a minute. Didn't you not play any professional sports and that's literally your entire living? Yes, but you, me, most people we know can watch games and go, this guy's good, this guy's bad. Almost like a movie. Do you like movies? Yeah. Do you like good ones? How do you know? You're not an actor, you're not a director, but you know a good movie. But what's happened with guys that have played college football at a high level, and again, guys that I've worked with, some guys that I would actually consider friends, whether it's a Danny Cannell, Matt Leinart, Booger McFarland, Bobby Carpenter, I don't know that well, but I know he's been kind of going off lately about Ohio State and all that. And there's so many more people that I could name that I've worked with that all look at the criticism of this process going, yeah, you know what? Like, can't they find a way to get these kids out there and play football? That's what I would want to do. And we've touched on this early in the week. But that is met with a collective eye roll from so many college football media members that are like, this guy. Like, what do you mean this guy? This guy played. And I don't love the I played, you didn't attitude of so many analysts, especially newer analysts, because there's plenty of guys that played in the NBA and I listen to their takes, be like, you're terrible at this. Like, how, like, what? I'm talking about simply the person that decided at some point to sign a letter of intent, show up, scholarship, go through the whole thing and go, you know what? This is actually a really good experience and I love it. I would hate to have younger players be denied that experience that we all seem to really like. And talking to different teams, being like, all of our guys want to play. But yet there is this,
did you hear this Matt Leinart cap? Actually thinks guys should be want to play football this year in college. This fucking idiot.
That's how it feels like. And I can't, I've been racking my brain trying to figure out what other industries, like what if I did, instead of life advice, parent advice with no kids every week, would you like that segment? What if I walked up to you in the mall? All right. You're in the courtyard. You got three kids, boogers everywhere. One guy's got a diaper that you don't want to deal with. And it's just a shit show. And all they want is chicken fingers and the chicken fingers. And it's just a mess, right? And the kids are out of control and you've had them all day, right? Those are your, really kids are like your own social media feed where somebody walks by you being like, why are you so upset? And you're like, because I've been dealing with this all day, asshole, all right? But the point is, what if I rolled up, probably in a tank top, hat on backwards, sorry, Cowherd, and said to you as you were struggling with your three kids that are driving you crazy and said, you know, look, I don't have any kids, but have you thought about sort of a task reward system? Can you imagine if I said that to you? What if every week? Now, look, I have some thoughts on parenting. I'm the oldest of five. I've been around kids. I really like kids. But I'm not going to tell you specifically that you're doing it wrong. I mean, there's extremes where I could say, yeah, that's probably not a great idea. And I'm not even going to use any examples. But it's really interesting how so many college football players that are big names, we all know, we watch them and now we've watched them on TV with opinions, and the majority of their opinions are, can more be done to try to save a season? And maybe the season can't even be saved. I'm conceding that. I've conceded that the entire time. But that is where you get a lot of the ex-players being like, are you guys serious? Why are you right? Why are you so convinced you're right? I don't know what else I could think of. I was thinking of, you know, is there a cooking show where, yes, I know what a good meal is, but if I had never been a chef and then I sat there and told the guy that his inspiration for the dish was wrong, like, how does that play? I mean, God, chef to chef, I don't think you can do that. All right, chef analogy, not as good as the parent Rosillo stopping by at the mall task reward analogy, but just something to think about as you see more and more of these guys fighting with each other. A little NBA here. I don't like the bubble invitation thing. Hey, non-Family Guy, transition right into that. It scares me a little bit. This has gone so well for the NBA, and you know it's tough, especially with these guys that have young kids, and you just love being around the young guys, and maybe even like some of your kids are a little bit older than that young pre-attitude stage. But it just scares me that it's all agreed to, because I think the optics to say you can't have your family come visit or no one can watch you, especially as we're getting closer to like naming an NBA champion here and there's the NBA finals and it's playing out and no one from your family can be in the stands and watching it and stuff when media members can, that doesn't seem fair. But there's some real, maybe they pull it off, but I don't know why you'd invite in something that could derail this whole deal other than the league can't. Adam Silver is not the type of commissioner that would say, I'm against you guys having family members. And some players, I'm sure, are like, look, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be away from my family for 3 months. I'm sure some guys are like, I'm good with it. Imagine the guy that has a serious girlfriend that he can't stand and wanted to break up with before the bubble. And now she's like, all right, well, I guess I'll see you at the end of August. I was like, And then she's calling him. She's like, didn't you get eliminated? You're like, no, that's Series A. Like, Series A? What the fuck, man? You're in the East. No, they changed it. Soccer stuff. What? Oh, yeah. We're in Group J now.
What? Yeah. Yeah. No, no. I'll send you a link later. So I'm not coming to the bubble? Nah. And then he realized, like, oh, he got eliminated. He's in Greece without you. That's going to be a tough one. Wanting to break up, not being able to break up because of the pandemic. And then you figure, whatever, I'll be in the bubble. I'll get away from her. And then now she's packing up all the accessories. And you now, that's the kind of stuff where that alone is more of a hassle. And if I were a coach, I'd be like, how many of our guys have been really stress-free through this whole thing, the isolation? Like, I got to understand. Look, I'm not trying to be a complete jerk about this, but I can understand the guys that miss their significant others and want their family around. But I'm just being real with you here that there's a whole crew of dudes that are like, this hassle. How about the guys that got like three girlfriends that all think they're coming to the bubble? And before you say, well, that's not that true, I can't believe some of the NBA stories I hear about dudes. I'm talking, hey, I need tickets for my wife and my mistress, but just make sure they're not in the same section. And it's cool. Like, whenever I hear that, and I've heard it all the time with different, I heard it about a coach once. I'm like, why would you even want to invite that hassle in? Unless everybody just sort of, I don't know where people meet people where it's just like, yeah, you know, he's got his mistress, but, you know, as long as someone takes care of the lawn. But yeah, that stuff happens all the time. I heard about one player one time who had wife, mistress, and then like a new girl he had just met. And it was like, just make sure they're all set up differently. And I was like, my God, that's a high risk individual. That's the Jason Bourne NBA rosters. Like, he doesn't care. I don't even like getting tagged and stuff when I'm not doing anything wrong, you know? So I can't fathom what's going to happen here in the bubble and how tough those conversations are going to be. And some of the people, the number of people that think they're getting invited to the bubble versus the number that's not. And then on the final thing, where basically the NBA is like, no DM IG models. You have to know. Who's proving the two people knew each other? That's going to be one of the easiest lies to ever make. No, no, Florida, Niagara Falls. Nah, like, what are you going to do? Ferris Bueller, roll her old bones down here? Like, you can't, do you have to? I don't know. I don't know how you're going to sit there and deem, like, do you really want to tell an NBA player, yeah, you know what? You two guys haven't known each other long enough. You haven't proved enough. Like, I need more evidence. Do we have any time stamp? Can we do any carbon dating on some pictures here? Is there going to be somebody from the NBA office that scrolls through feeds? Like, we don't see anything here prior to August 1st. She's out. So there you go. Please subscribe, rate, and review Ryan Russillo Podcast. Don't worry, it's not over now. We're going to do more than 14 minutes, I promise. But before we do that, who's getting a workout in today? I did 100 squats yesterday, Kyle. 10, very lightweight. Lightweight. 1 minute off in between. 10, 1 minute off in between. Try to get it done in 20 minutes. It doesn't always work out that way. It should go quicker than that with 1 minute off, but sometimes... This old warrior's knees got a little creaky.
Leg day is the worst day, man.
Oh, it's the best day, actually.
No. That's what you guys have to tell yourselves to get it through it, but it's the worst day, man.
I love it.
It sucks.
David Pollock said to me in the weight room once, he was like, what are you doing today, chest or something? I was like, yeah. Ouch. And he goes, I was like, what are you doing, like legs? Cool. Guys that, I'm actually kind of making fun of myself because I'm, you know, the injury things, apparently they're just not going to go away. Like, if I pull my right arm back behind my head, like a tricep stretch, and I do it on the right side, there's just this thing that goes down my shoulder and through my tricep that's toast. Ew. It's been like that since Super Bowl week. Yeah. So since I'm actually Super Bowl saying this. Week,
Christ.
When it happened, I was like, oh, that sucks. So like the last two significant ones, like I just like, oh, this is fine. So now I'm doing this stupid pec band thing. Are we still taping right now?
Yeah, we're doing.
Anyway, what are we doing? No. So the point I was going to make about legs, and then we're going to just quickly move on, is this is sort of a whoop read. Pollock, after he made fun of me, and it's still David Pollock, who's, I think I've shared this with you before, such a psychopath about his fitness that when somebody brought cupcakes by the studio, he would lick them so that he wouldn't eat them. You're like, okay, but you could have just not eaten them also and had other people eat the non-licked ones. Had you thought of that? it's like when Cowherd used to, like, actually, he would finger rip off pieces of donuts and then leave the rest of it there. And you would be like, did somebody take a bite out of that? Like, no, Cowherd, Cowherd just ruins the donuts by touching them all. You know, like he'll take like four bites from different donuts and then it looks like, but he did it with his hands. I'm like, yeah, that's probably not as bad as just taking bites out of them. But, you know, people have different eating styles. That's something crazy about learning about different people as you get older. You go out to eat with them. And like we had a dude who licked his plate.
Out? Damn.
Yeah. Like, what the hell is that? Oliver? You know, when he goes up for a little bit more porridge?
Yes.
That's Oliver, right?
Oliver, yeah. Twist. Yeah. Yes. Young, yeah. Twist.
I've seen that movie. It was a long time ago. It's very dusty. I don't know how it would hold up in HD, but he licked his plate. And I remember Cannell and I being like, what the? We were out to dinner and we were like, hungry, dude? So anyway, people eat differently and that's what Pollock does. So back to leg day. I promise the story's over. He said, well, you know, he goes, leg day. He goes, can't be a legendary day without leg day. I went, wow. Put it on a hoodie. Boom. Let's talk about fitness. Whoop is a fitness wearable that I've been using for the last few months to track my training, sleep, and recovery. It's been awesome. By the way, the workouts have just been better. Best stretch I've had despite the injuries. Best stretch I've probably had in a long time because I've made myself go faster in between every set. So if you guys want a little pick-me-up, just keep track of it. Put the phone down. Stop looking at her. The key to Whoop is that you wear it all day long and never miss a beat. They have a really smart charging system where their battery pack slides right on top of the strap, so you never have to take it off to charge. You won't ever have to worry about losing a night of sleep or missing a workout. Whoop has been all over the news lately after the PGA Tour procured 1,000 straps for its golfers, caddies, and staff to help everyone at tournaments stay safe throughout the pandemic. Whoop has been using respiratory rate to help members detect potential signs of illness before other symptoms develop. With Whoop, you receive workout goals from its strain coach that pairs your recovery to a certain strain level. If your body is recovering, you're going to want to take a rest day. If you're ready to go, it's going to recommend you push it. Stop overtraining and start catering your workouts to your body's recovery. You can track your stages of sleep down to the minute. The sleep thing is incredible. I'm telling you guys, each morning, check out how much REM or deep sleep you got from the previous night and actually understand how well you're sleeping, not just how many hours you were in bed for. Whoop custom tailors its sleep recommendations to each member based on their baselines and how active they were during the day. With Whoop, you're really getting a personal trainer on your wrist that helps you learn your body and make smarter lifestyle choices. For my listeners, Whoop is offering 15% off with the code RUSSILLO, RUSSILLO, at checkout. Go to Whoop, that's WHOOP.com, and enter RUSSILLO, that's RUSSILLO, at checkout to save 50%. Sleep better, recover faster, train smarter, optimize your performance with Whoop. 3 years with the Ohio State Buckeyes men's basketball team, also at Butler. He's an All-American, for those that remember his run at Taylor back in college. And Chris Holtman joins us now on the podcast. Thanks a lot for doing this. I really appreciate it. How are you?
Yeah, great being with you, Ryan. I'm looking forward to it, man.
So what are your days like now?
I tell you, it's hadn't it been strange for all of us? I think the... I told somebody yesterday, I think our guys, the happiest our guys, our players have been is the 7 weeks they were with us in the summer, because they had some level of routine to their days. So honestly, right now, I'm actually away for a few days at the beach, seeing my brother and his family. But, you know, real simple. I get up every day now. I get up and try to do some type of workout. It probably doesn't look quite like yours, Ryan, but I do try to do some type of workout and get my body moving. It's usually about 30 to 45 minutes. And, you know, I'm a big podcast guy, so I'll listen to entertaining podcasts, but I'll also listen to some really, you know, Angela Duckworth, someone whatever she puts out, I follow and listen to. But yeah, some type of personal growth deal. I'll get my day started with those two things.
Okay. I like that. The physical and the mental got it covered early on. your team had an up and down kind of weird year, but yeah, that was everybody that was ranked. I mean, the number of teams that were losing to unranked teams, it was basically like, let's just cycle them all out. So you could have expectations. And certainly we know how rabid that fan base is, but what was it like when you had to tell the guys, because you probably didn't know that much either, where it comes from the top down, hey, the season's over, the NCAA is doing this, no tournaments, no NCAA tournament, and now we're just, it's over. What was that like?
Well, listen, I remember driving to the Big Ten. We took the bus from Columbus to Indianapolis for the Big Ten tournament, and I called my athletic director, Gene Smith, and I said, hey, I'm hearing that there could be some cancellation, because right there were games – while we were traveling, there were games going on that night, some of the earlier games. And so I kept hearing that, hey, this could happen. At that time, I think we were both convinced it wasn't going to happen. We go through that evening, and there's still some uncertainty. It was the night that Rudy Gobert, that happened. So you started to hear a trickle down from the NBA. I got up early that morning and watched film. We were playing Purdue, so I watched film. And I got a pretty early text message from Urban Meyer that came in, and you know, he's pretty tied into our season. And he said, you know, really all he said was, a lot going on right now. Focus. And, you know, like in caps, you know, typical Urban, like, hey, listen, like, you know, like focus on what you're doing. Don't worry about what's going on other places. And that kind of snapped me to it right there. I said, all right, coach, and watch a little more film. We went through a walkthrough. You're right. Our season, we had a really good year, but we had a really tough January. We had a great non-conference, tough January. And then we were playing terrific, Ryan. Our numbers, all of the metrics really put us as we were 8th in KenPom. So it was hard telling a group that was playing so well down the stretch that it was over. You know, that's what we all had to do. And they had to think kind of big picture at that point.
There are so many different arguments going on at the same time right now. It's hard to keep track of them. One thing that I mentioned at the top, and I've kind of mentioned it times before, is that, you know, I never was good enough to play anywhere, but I can't imagine people that have never played telling me I shouldn't play. And I can understand the safety part of this, but I also look at my friends that have played at big, say, college football programs that have said this is this great experience, and yet the people that never did it are saying, you know what, it's wrong, the kids are used. How do you feel? Because sometimes I'll struggle with, does the media member actually do a better job of keeping people in check, or are they absolutely clueless about what the process is like and what the players actually want to do?
You know, I think we had a great example of our players, our football players, and some of our other fall athletes, Ryan, as you know, probably a week ago, became really outspoken about their viewpoint. And in a day and age where we're all trying to empower players and we're encouraging their voices to be heard, whether it's along the lines of social justice or just in this case where they're saying, hey, listen, we feel our safest in this moment between the regular testing. We get tested as a program every Monday and Thursday morning at 7 a.m. That was for basketball guys that were just here. You can imagine that obviously football, you know, it was that, at least that. I know it was twice a week. So I think all the protocols that were in place gave our players and our football players, and I give them a ton of credit because it was some of the most prominent players on the team were really outspoken. I think it was pretty organic. I think they just said, hey, listen, they might have sensed the winds where this thing was headed, with potentially a delay or an end to their season. And they said, let our voices be heard. You know, whether or not they were fully heard or not, I know they were by our athletic department, but beyond that, it's a tough question.
Is there a disconnect then between the coaches, athletic department, and the school administrators?
No, I think our school was in alignment, and I don't want to speak for Ryan and the football staff there. Ryan Bay's done an outstanding job, and I don't want to speak for him, but I do think that the communication between Gene Smith and us throughout these last few weeks has been, really throughout the pandemic, has been phenomenal. Like, we know exactly where we're at. I just think because of, and you mentioned it, probably because of media, in particular social media, right? This is the first time, you know, we've went through a pandemic in an age of social media and 24-hour news cycles. So every argument gets exponentially greater because of the element of social media. But I think that our school was in alignment on wanting a delay for fall sports. You know, unfortunately, that's not the direction it went.
What are you being told as far as basketball then for a Big Ten program?
You know, it's interesting. I got a call with Gene this afternoon, and it's the first time we're going to touch base. We meet every Thursday as Big Ten coaches in the morning to talk through this cycle of, okay, what's next? We compare testing at all of the schools. All of the protocols are in place. We're really, you know, I think coaches, we're all pretty territorial, you know, that we're really like, what's this guy doing? And I don't want to say too much. And that all ends with something as serious as this, you know,
but we all hope so.
You know, we think we're giving away state secrets, you know, by talking about, you know, how we defend a ball screen in a clinic. In reality, we're not. We take ourselves too seriously, but we've been really transparent. Izzo and Painter and those guys have kind of led the way about being an open book because it's the safety of our players. So I don't know. What I do know is this, you know, as well as I do, the amount of money at stake, and that's just the reality with an NCAA tournament for all of the schools involved, much less the NCAA tournament. And you're talking what, over $800 million. So the reality is we'll have a tournament. I really believe that. I think we'll have a season, but I think it's going to look completely different.
That's a great point, though. Like on the beginning, you almost start from a position on a conference call with all these other guys you're competing against, other games, recruiting bases, all these different things. You start from this complete position of apprehension to then kind of coming to a common ground. But we've even seen it on the football side, how divided the schools can be. And that's, I sort of love that about conferences, that conferences kind of have this identity in comparison to other conferences. But then when you go inside the conference, it's okay, are we in the same direction for the conference? Or are you thinking specifically about your chances as a football team, your chances as a basketball team? I'm just curious how, not divisive it is, but have there been moments where it feels like we may be in a conference, but we're on different pages?
Absolutely. And I think that's been clear here of late, really, when you watch kind of how the football thing has moved, Ryan, because now it seems there's so many differing opinions. There's not really a voice. Now, the difference for college basketball, as you well know, is that the NCAA controls the NCAA tournament and much of college basketball, and Dan Gavitt does an unbelievable job. So while we may not have, quote unquote, a commissioner of college basketball, we do have kind of a centralized voice that will be making some decisions because they control the tournament. So, you know, while we can talk about a league in the Pac-12, obviously eliminated non-conference college basketball games until January 1, I think the NCAA will have a major voice in what this looks like. And that's so different than football because you do see in football, you know, leagues kind of operating on their own because there's not a centralized voice.
Can a basketball guy talk to a football guy, especially at Ohio State, or do you have to let Ryan Day be the alpha in the conversation?
Yeah. I know where I'm at. That's true.
What a perfectly concise answer. That was great.
I know where I'm at. I know where I'm at, and I know what really, really, really matters here. It's not to say that that basketball doesn't. It's certainly important to our fan base. But listen, I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky. I grew up in blue blood college basketball country. Like that's a part of me. I've coached in North Carolina. I've coached in Indiana. So I've been in these basketball centric states. But listen, there's nothing like the only thing comparable to Columbus is Lexington, Kentucky when it comes to college basketball there. I've not seen anything like the fervor of Columbus in this state for football. The short answer would be, I let him control a lot of the conversation, but he's a great guy. Our families have gotten to know each other. He came in a unique time following Urban. We both have kind of followed really legendary guys in our sports.
Yeah, I'm so impressed with Ryan. I mean, blown away. And I'd heard good things. I knew some of the people that he worked for, but to then go ahead and do it following Urban, like, we'll see. And they haven't missed a beat, really. And, you know, it's not a matter of if, it'll just be when they win a title. Let's go back to your background there a little bit, because you ended up in an NAI school, but you're an All-American. You're a terrific player at that level. Did you have to have like a D1 wake-up where you go, hey, Chris, this isn't happening? Or could you have maybe done that and just never played?
Oh, I could have walked on. I could have sat the bench. I didn't want to do that. And I think the reality is I wasn't near good enough to ever play at the Division I. There's a jump, as you know, between what that at that time NAIA basketball and Division I. I never had that dream. Honestly, my dream was I fell in love with playing at a small college, loved it, loved the experience, and wouldn't trade it. My coaching path has taken me kind of in a different place than I even thought it would initially. And I'm grateful for that, but it's certainly been different than I initially thought.
How different is recruiting to a place like Ohio State versus a place like Butler?
You know, I had great appreciation for, and obviously Brad Stevens and I are close friends. So seeing him operate at such a high level for a number of years there, and he would be the first to admit that they were good before he got there, but he obviously took them to a ridiculous level. It helps, right, when you can recruit Gordon Haywood and Shelvin Mack and have the best player probably to ever play in Matt Howard. And they had an unbelievable run. I think their second year was one of the most incredible runs because their team wasn't as good. But it's the move to the Big East has – the difference in recruiting is the name and the branding at Ohio State is – it's more significant. So your reach potentially can go further places. The reality is now the level of play between the Big East and Big Ten is very comparable. Obviously, it wasn't the case when they were playing in the Horizon League. But now, those are two of the best leagues in the country. I was fortunate enough to coach against the Jay Wrights and Chris Mack and you know, Ed Cooley. And those, it's a phenomenal league. So you're really looking for players that are of similar caliber. It's just your reach sometimes at Ohio State can be more significant. When Ohio State has been elite, our state has usually been really deep and good with players.
The geographic part of it, I can't ever, well, I try to explain to some people, again, it's not like I'm living in this world like you are day to day, but you know, when I go to Texas for a football game and I look at the 2D and I look at the roster and you go, they don't even have to go outside the state, specifically Louisiana that doesn't have the recruiting base in football like Georgia, Florida, Texas, or California. But then I'll look through and there might be like one kid from Alabama and like another kid from Ohio, and then it's all Louisiana. Well, basketball, it's a little different because it's more of the circuits. But there'll be different programs that I'll talk to, be like, hey, were you in on this kid? And they just go, we don't even bother. Like, look where he's from. Look at the high school, his tie into this and all these different things. So will you and the staff, like, yeah, let's go get every 5-star, but will you also kind of have this, do you have to be realistic that you're not wasting time going after every big name knowing that some of these kids are in absolute reach, even though you're this great program?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question because that's finding that, finding that lane is really, really important to sustaining success. You know, what is the type of kid you want to coach? And what is the type of kid that would be great in your system? And then not wasting your time on guys that might be outside your reach. And yet also, you know, not, you can always take low hanging fruit. The reality is we're all trying to recruit a certain level of talent and character. But I think at a place like Ohio, I've always said, hey, listen, at the end of the day, we're not going to get every great player in our region, but the ones that we really determine, hey, this is a really good fit and he's an elite player, you know, we've certainly got to get our share of them. And I think what we've tried to do is really recruit regionally. It's again why, you know, when his years were, he had a phenomenal run of years, it was so much of it was really Ohio, some Indiana, Illinois. Evan Turner was from Illinois, as you know. It was that region. So we've really tried to focus on that and be committed to it. And yet at the same time, I also realized that this may not be the place for everybody. We're going to do things a certain way, and we have to be committed to the kind of athlete and person we want to take and not deviate from that. But it really, I think when you're at a place like, if you're at a true blue blood, obviously our football program is a legitimate blue blood. Well, then your national scope in recruiting is different. For us, it's still going to be relatively regionalized for the most part.
I've noticed this with younger players when I just, you know, back when people were still playing outside all the time, you would notice shot selection. even when I was doing my draft stuff for this year's class, the top guys, shot selection. I am convinced this isn't even a theory anymore, but because of what Steph, Harden, Lillard have done, and Trae Young a little bit too, extending out the acceptable shot, that every kid now, they don't even care if they go in. They just want to show you they're going to pull up from 30. How quick do you have to get that out of some of the kids when they show up? I'm not saying it's everyone, but it feels like a basketball phenomenon now where it's, I just need to show you I'm pulling up from 30 to show you my game. And you're like, does it matter if it goes in or not? Because this year's class, there's a bunch of guys that it doesn't go in enough to actually take those shots.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, you watch some of these bubble games right now. I texted Brad after they played Portland a little while, and Dame was unstoppable. I think they tried to defend him about five different ways in the fourth quarter.
Can I jump in there? Because I'm with you. He's coming off that high screen, and I don't ever pretend to know it as well as you guys do, but I could kind of see what Brad's doing, where he's like, hell, let's just pick up the screen. Let's make him set the screen way out. Like, let's extend it. Let's extend it. And then once Dame gets one dribble and his step, it doesn't even matter. So what do you do in those moments? Because I think us from the outside, we think there's all these solutions. It's just that you haven't figured out what the solution is. And I'll argue, well, sometimes there is no solution. So what do you guys, like, if you were with Brad, what the hell would you guys be doing trying to figure that out?
There's not. In the way the NBA is structured right now, there is no answer. The answer is try to put guys at the four and the five, or however they call them, that are your best pick and roll defenders, and then hope that they don't hurt you defensively. And I think he feels really good about his pick and roll defense at those
Tice, positions. Yeah. Yeah, Tice, yeah.
But if you have a slow-footed big, I watched him, like Porzingis, he's an unbelievable player, but man, did they pick on him.
He got killed the other day. Yeah.
He got killed. And I texted him, and he was, you know, like typical Brad is like, he's unbelievable. He's ridiculous. It's just, I don't know that there are real simple answers. I do think occasionally you can give them a different look. I know some people have, you know, the idea of trapping Harden right now.
That's
become
big.
A little bit involved. And I think that's an interesting part of it. You're basically saying, hey, we're going to allow you to play 4-on-3. We're just going to allow you to play 4-on-3. We're going to trap you at half court. It's gutsy, but I think there is some of that. That's what we would do in college. I think that can translate a little bit. As you know, the spacing is so different in the NBA. But back to your shot selection, what we try to do with guys, because it's true, they see it, is we try to hammer efficiency, because efficiency matters. It matters in college. It matters to NBA scouts. It matters to NBA coaches and general managers. How efficient are you as a player? So you can watch what Dame and Steph and those guys are doing, but let's not forget they make more than they miss in most cases, or at least close to. And if you can't execute that, then it's really making you look like a worse player than what you are. So the idea of, we hammer efficiency numbers. We just had one of our guards who said his goal was 50, 40, 90, which is kind of a standard efficiency rating in college. It's hard to get that, but it's good thinking along those lines.
Yeah, I love when you were talking trap, because I think that's another thing we'll make mistakes about. We're going to be like, you're just going to trap it. You're just going to trap it. But like Harden's vision and his size, I mean, that's what makes Luka so good against some of these traps, because he's that big and can pass over this stuff. But I remember that first Warriors-Cavs finals when all the Cavs guys, one of Love and Kyrie, were hurt, but they were trying to trap Steph as soon as he came across. And it screwed him up for a little bit. And then Steph realized, wait, the quicker I get rid of the ball now, I can just run past this trap, and now they're scrambling because somebody's off, and then I can come back to the ball. So I love the trap thing, but in a playoff series, sometimes I go, especially somebody like Harden. Like, you could trap Harden all you want, but if you just keep sending him doubles every time on the catch, he's going to end up burning you because he burns you now. But I love that stuff because we're always convinced, you know, it's the same as that Monday morning quarterback thing where it's like, oh, I hate play calling. And I've always been kind of like, well, you don't know. You don't know what they called. All the stuff they may have called worked out.
No, I want one of the, from an outsider's perspective, obviously, you know, ball, but from, you know, I remember this year, for example, we had a game we lost in the last minute. It was during our tough stretch in January. And, you know, I don't get on social media, but a couple of days I did afterwards. And there was this big conversation about, they said, I can't even believe they didn't have a play for the last 4 seconds. It was basically a full court play. They didn't have a play for the last 4 seconds. We actually ran it. Apparently we didn't execute it very well, or it didn't look very organized, but that was our play. So, you know, to that fan out there, we actually had one, we called it. We just didn't execute it.
Did you want to respond when you saw it?
Oh yeah. Oh, I all the time. All the time.
Have you ever? I don't know that I've.
No, but the number of times where I've said, I'm going to respond to this dude, and shown it to my wife or staff, and then been like, no, not a good idea. Just pump the brakes, go for a walk. It's been a lot.
Yeah. And you only get it every single day of your life. And yet the one time you do, the one that makes you even madder is when somebody be like, get mad much? You're like, I've deleted three years of these and never sent one. But I'll tell you, you just never want to. You just won't. And if you type it out and then you erase it, you just feel that much better. Because you're like, all right, it's a little exercise.
Yeah. That's right.
Has Brad at Stevens ever been mad? Like, really not mad against a call, but like crazy? Because he's so down the middle so many times. I've been able to meet him a few times. He's been nice enough to come on the show over the years. But have you ever seen him like actually really unhinged, like a different version of Brad? Does one exist?
Oh man, it's yeah, I have, but it's been few and far between. His emotional control. We were at probably the maddest I've seen him is we came up and played them in a bye game when I was coaching at Gardner Webb. And it was the year after their second Final Four, I believe. So they were in a little bit of a down year, you know, by his standards. But we had them down 20 at half. It was, you know, we were guarding the web, and they weren't expecting. They had paid a lot of money, and he was so hot at the officials the first, you know, two or three moments of the second half in the first, like he was on them. So that's probably the angriest I've seen him. But he gets angrier and he's more fiery than I think people realize. You wouldn't have been successful as without having a real edge to how he coaches. He very much does, but he just has a great way of kind of hiding it.
Yeah, whenever he does the interviews, you would think he's the most boring person ever, but I agree that on the sidelines, when he's upset, he gets upset and he has a fierceness to him, but it's not like he doesn't have the body language or the histrionics. You can see it in his face that he's upset, and he'll let somebody have it. But then when he does the interviews, he owns everything. Sometimes to a point where I go, and that's what I kind of wonder, do you guys feel now as head coaches, and this is true, I think, for college or pro, maybe even more so in college, that with the access to negativity that so many kids have, and I don't want to call people, I don't know if people are more sensitive now. Older people are always going to call people younger sensitive. But do you feel like you have to shield them and take ownership of some failures that really probably aren't on you to always make it sure you're looking out for the kid, where previous generations would probably dump on their players more?
Yeah, I think to a degree, Ryan. I do think to a degree. But I think more than anything, your players need to see you take criticism and ownership of your own failures in a real honest and authentic way, or else you're going to lose your guys. I don't think you need to overdo it, but I think you got to be authentic in it. I think they have to see that you own a time where you felt like maybe you didn't prepare them as well as you needed to. Because I think if they see you immune to all that, you're going to lose your locker room pretty quickly.
Okay, last one. I feel like I'm right about this, but people always resist it. I think college basketball coaches are actually crazier than college football coaches. And maybe that's just because I've seen Mick Cronin and Jamie Dixon in person. But where would you agree with me on that one? Because many people have pushed back on this. I think your industry gets more worked up and insane about stuff than even college football coaches do.
You know what? It's a tough argument, because being in this with colleagues that I know, and having the good fortune of coaching against a guy like Mick, he's terrific coach, but I might side with you on this. We're a crazy lot. That is for sure. And, I think you have to be to kind of do what we do.
I didn't even bring up Crean, my buddy, Tom. I didn't even bring up Tom yet. So he doesn't want to feel left out here.
Yeah. I will tell you, scope studies will show you, we get crazier in February and in March. And you go back, you look at the number of technicals, they all increase in February and March. So you catch us on a bad day in February. Yeah, I think the argument might stand that we're a little crazier than football coaches.
Well, it makes sense, because you start the season in Maui and the Bahamas and everybody's relaxed. It's not cold yet. And then you come back. This was awesome. And I can't thank you enough, Coach. And I look forward to watching you guys play hoops again. We don't know when that is, but Ohio State has a good one. So thanks.
I think it'll happen for sure. Thanks a lot, Ryan. Enjoy your show, and great being with you, man.
Sports are finally back, and the only way to celebrate the return is with Buffalo Wild Wings. There's no fans in the crowd, but that doesn't mean the real fans aren't at home cheering louder than ever from the edge of their seat, and they can still get that sports bar feeling with wings from B-Dubs. The only thing as exciting as sports being back is crushing boneless or traditional wings at home, and any of our 24 sauces and seasonings like Original Buffalo, Wild, or Kyle.
Asian zing, baby.
That's right. So order a wing bundle and get a traditional wings plus boneless wings and fries for the house, because sports are back and there's no better way to watch than with Buffalo Wild Wings. So order at buffalowildwings.com or through the Buffalo Wild Wings app, because now more than ever, we need sports and sports need us. I just want to remind you, yes, I have two friends that have a bunch of franchises. The amount of time they put into updating the menu and stuff over the last few years, I'm fascinated by it. And it's really something, you know, the way they would kind of like actively go and, hey, can we try this? Can we try some of these different things? And these guys are like big time food background guys. So if you haven't been in a while, go check it out anyway, or do the big bundle and bring it all home. So this is all at participating locations for a limited time. Bundles only for takeout or delivery through Buffalo Wild Wings app or website, and not valid with any other offer. I want to do my ballot. I don't have one, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Giannis is your MVP. LeBron should be everybody's number two, but I just don't understand the LeBron over Giannis vote. And whether you want to get into all the normal stats or the fact that Giannis makes this thing go, the LeBron thing is weird in that it's, and he's been awesome this year. He's been awesome again. But it's almost like Anthony Davis doesn't count. And I have Anthony Davis third in my MVP voting. So I have Giannis, LeBron, AD, Harden, and Kawhi. I went with Harden over Kawhi because of the games that he played. Harden, AD, I could switch either of those. And I wouldn't argue about it. I think I've gone back and forth on it. But I think Anthony Davis's defense is so insane this year and the different things that he's done. And remember, the bubble, the seeding games never counted. So, you know, Bill on Sunday Night's pod said, you know, I just wish the NBA had given us more time, because I would have changed out Ben Simmons. And it was a really good point by Bill. And it's one of those great examples where when somebody tells you kind of the one side that they understand, you immediately agree with them. And then I was looking at different things. I was like, that's right. They wanted the ballots in because they wanted this to be fair and not hold anyone else in a position of just, everything has been fairness. Okay. If there's one thing about this, fairness, and the league didn't want to be unfair, whether it was the seeding games and the play-in game with the less games or leaving a Wizards out, but they didn't want players to have an advantage that were playing extra games. So they wanted basically all the games to count up to when they stopped playing in the beginning of March. So that actually made a little bit more sense. So I have Giannis, LeBron again, AD, Harden, Kawhi. When it comes down to Giannis, LeBron, Giannis defense and the overall stats are there. There's some efficiency stuff that actually does favor LeBron a little bit. And I can never tell, like, do you give Giannis credit because of what his per 36 and per 40 would be, considering he plays 30 minutes a night? Or do you give LeBron more credit that at 35, he's the guy that has to be out there, because when he comes off the floor for the Lakers, it hasn't been pretty. But when you look at overall plus net rating, I'm not talking plus minus, but just straight up net rating, Giannis is number one in the league at like 12. LeBron's right there with him at 11. And then number three is Harden. So that's why I think it should be Giannis and LeBron and, you know, number three go ahead. But I don't think there should ever be anybody in those top two. The defensive part of this, I think, is eye test versus stats. Because if you look at some of the defensive plus minus stuff, LeBron's third overall in the league. And usually I feel like defensive stats tell us accurate stories at the extremes, meaning if you're at the top, that's usually a pretty good indicator. Chris Paul for years was off the charts for point guards and some of these defensive metrics. And then if you're at the bottom, and you can get dragged down by your teammates if your overall team just sucks on defense, but some guys are just terrible at it, and it proves this out. LeBron has not been as good as Giannis on defense this year, and the major argument I would make is that his assignments, which I've pointed out throughout the year, he's always guarded really the least dangerous offensive player. I mean, other than a completely ridiculous positional size matchup that doesn't make a ton of sense, but he'll guard the worst wing, even though, and I know some of you are going to say, well, whatever, what about Kawhi and Paul George? Yeah, that was an awesome closeout at the end, and he was actually assigned to Kawhi a lot more on that one. I feel like Giannis has had to take more of a defensive burden on than LeBron. But as Bill and I pointed out after the Lakers beat Milwaukee before the season shut down, we're like, beware of the narrative voter. Beware of the storyteller. Writers are storytellers. They like stories. And you're starting to hear that more and more. I mean, Cowherd, again, second reference of my boy, but he was making his LeBron argument. And I was like, okay, new teammate, Anthony Davis. That's actually kind of a good thing, not a hard thing. New coach, Frank Vogel. Okay, fine. Team hadn't made the playoffs in a bunch of years. Okay, fine. They're probably going to make it last year if LeBron ends up not getting hurt. But then when he went to like reason number six, new assistant coach, I was like, all right, I'm out. Like, you should have stopped at four. Six was a little shaky. So even though Giannis is behind some of the defensive metrics, no, there's not one person that can tell me that LeBron has actually been the better defensive player of those two guys. Rookie of the year, it's Ja. He played more games. Congrats to Zion, but whatever. Coach of the year, it's Nick Nurse. I wish any of you, I get somebody on who's just willing to talk about Nick Nurse and the glowing fashions people do off the record, because no one's really let me say, like, it's almost like some other teams, like, I don't want him to know how much we think he's awesome, but people think he's awesome, and Nick Nurse would be my coach of the year, even though there's a lot of great candidates. But post Kawhi, to have this team playing the way it is, to have the depth, to all these interchangeable parts, where you look at some teams and go, who are they? And it can be a negative. Toronto, whenever I say, who are they? It's a positive because of all these different things that they can throw at you. And I think that's what we're going to see a lot of in the playoffs. And defensively, they're just different. They're different. Rookie of the year. Yep, I said Ja, more games than Zion. Sixth man, I'm going to quote Jay Cutler here. Don't care. I just don't. I don't care about it this year, even though it could be Lou Williams or his teammate Montrez, who I think I would probably vote for, over Schroeder, who I've been really impressed with as he's kind of accepted who he is, at least in this Oklahoma City lineup. And by the way, Thunder, Rockets, first round, can't wait. But this quad issue with Westbrook is definitely alarming. He's played only one game since August 4th. And we're going to share that with you in some of the stat stuff a little bit later. But the emotions in that first round, that might be my favorite potential playoff series of any of them, other than, you know, what's at stake for the finals. But I just don't really care about sixth man this year, because even though Lou puts up big numbers and he's so important to that second unit scoring, I just feel like he's so indifferent to defense at times that it's actually not always great when he's out there gunning and he's making all these buckets. And, you know, this is not, again, the seeding does not count here. So this is not a Magic City. This isn't an anti-Lou vote because of Magic City, because Magic City doesn't even count. Those wings don't even count right now, because we could only go up until the real regular season games. So that's my ballot. The newly rebranded stats to impress other people. I have a few for you. Hassan Whiteside is ninth in PER for the regular season. You want to know who else is in the top 10? Giannis, Harden, Anthony Davis, Doncic, Kawhi, Damian Lillard, LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Trae Young rounding out the top 10. And Hassan Whiteside. Do with that whatever you want. Let's look at offensive and defensive efficiency in the bubble. The number one offense in the bubble right now, Portland surpassing Boston and the Clippers. So that's your 1, 2, and 3. The bottom three offenses, bubble edition, Toronto. Wait a minute, Toronto. We'll get to them in a second. Washington, yes, they were in the bubble. You may have missed it. And the Lakers, the do not worry, we've got this shit, John Lucas Lakers. So how could Toronto be the third worst offense and be this good? Because their defensive efficiency in the bubble, it doesn't even make any sense how good it is. It's 101.8 points per 100 possessions. They're 5 points better than the number two defense in the bubble. So that means the level of defense that Toronto has been playing in the bubble is absolutely off the charts in comparison. Small sample size, me all to death. Honestly, guys that are saying small sample size in 2020, you should be canceled. Along with, I don't want to say jail time or the death sentence, but whoever said score the basketball first and infected the rest of us, maybe work, maybe like community service or something. Score the basketball. Imagine if we said, hey, Michael Thomas, the Saints, he's really good. He's great at scoring the football. Would that catch on? I hope not. All right, so the top three defenses. Toronto, as you mentioned, off the charts. Oklahoma City and Phoenix. Speaking of Oklahoma City, there's no series I'm more emotionally excited for than the Thunder and the Rockets. I am a little worried about Westbrook, though, with that quad injury. We'll see how that develops over time. Number three, Phoenix. Phoenix, the number three defense. No one saw that coming. The bottom three defenses, Dallas, Portland, not surprising at all. That's who they've been all year long. And even with Portland's reinforcements, they're bad defensively. And then Denver. The Portland Lakers thing is getting too much pro-Portland coverage. It really is. People, as Trudell pointed out, and it was good earlier this week, it's a nice little reminder because we can all get caught up in the hysteria of, man, you know? And it sucks. Like, look, if you're the Lakers and that's your eight seed, but back to the theory of fairness, they didn't want to just rule them out. And Dame is destroying people right now, but he's not going to get that Harden Curry recognition. I have Dame ahead of Westbrook, but you know, Paul is on the other side of things, but still terrific. But you know, if Dame's the third best point guard in the league, is that a slight? Is that a slight on him? It feels like some people are still arguing that. Sometimes you can be told or claimed, not you, not like Lillard is claiming this, but the coverage of Lillard is that he's so underrated that it's just, for the longer you keep saying somebody's so underrated when everybody knows how awesome he is, you're kind of like, has he become, well, you can't say overrated, but there should be an expiration on the term underrated with certain guys. Okay, so Toronto, Oklahoma City, Phoenix, we gave you the bottom three defenses. And this is the last one I have. I watched the Pacers-Rockets game this week. It was kind of funny, too, because the Rockets announcers, like almost every announcing team, not afraid to build up their own team. And they were down 14, but it was still like 4 to 5 minutes left. And there was a call that could have been challenged. Like, oh, Benet McMillan probably didn't want to call this one. You know, just pack them up and head home and take the win. And I'm thinking, man, with the Rockets, you think that this is unlikely that they can come back and close a double-digit deficit with a few minutes left to go? And that's exactly what happened. I think it was like a 12-2, 14-2 run. The Rockets get it to 2 points. Pacers have the ball. They're about 28, 29 seconds left, maybe 27 against a full shot clock. So you want to take that shot late. Oladipo kind of isos the top right and takes a shot with about 8 or 9 seconds left on the shot clock. So you could argue, even though I think the efficiency on the 2-for-1 front end is so bad that it's just accepted like, hey, what'd you do on that one? Well, I threw it around my back with my eyes closed, but we got 2-for-1. Ah, smart possession. But Oladipo took a bad shot, and there was still a lot of time left. And then guess what? The Pacers got the offensive rebound. And we know how bad the Rockets are on rebounding, but they are now a league-worst 43% rebound rate since the bubble started. And that was against the worst rebounding rate team in, as far as offensive rebounds go, in the fourth quarter. So Pacers, not just offensive rebounds, but the worst rebounding rate, fourth quarter team in the bubble, got the offensive rebound, that won the game. So as I've hinted at and touched on before, my mismatch theory that mismatches are overrated, big versus small, because the big ends up taking a bad shot and everybody stops playing offense. And then the number of times where I see a small get a big and they just take a step back three from third. Even when LeBron was prime LeBron, he used to just do that all the time. And guards do it constantly. And you think everybody's going to be stretched out and he's going to drive and then kick and the guy will settle for a three. So the mismatches that Houston gets isn't the problem. the problem is the rebounding. And if everybody's healthy, I can imagine certain games against the Rockets where the Thunder will leave Steven Adams in, and there's going to be times they have to take him out of the game. And it could be game to game. By the way, Harden, 76 free throws in the bubble. Unbelievable.
You want details? Fine. I drive a Ferrari, 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Let's do life advice, and we'll finish this podcast out. Kyle, how are you feeling about your life today?
I'm feeling great, man. I'm feeling great. Just had a narrow miss with a tree in my car. Got it all done while we were recording.
So you weren't paying attention to the audio content?
Not for the... it got the whole thing done in about 5 minutes. I think that's what we should be focusing on here.
Okay, cool. All right. We have a lot of updates to the updates. I don't think we're getting eight-figure guy updates anymore. Some people were accusing eight-figure guy of being fake. You know how I feel about the fake stuff. But I don't know. I don't know. We don't have a two-way authenticator on this one. So Mike checks in. He goes, hi, don't tell that guy to get a Roman numeral 3 unless he wants to be seen as a racist 3%er like that Patriots kicker.
Ooh. Oh.
That's I actually think that's a compliment to me. I'm so not racist that I didn't even know what that was. So, all right. So, yeah, that might be something to think about. I didn't even know that.
Is that guy Colin still in the Patriots? In.
Yeah, but he still covered it up.
Oh, okay. All right.
Our guy? I don't know if you want to rephrase that one. Right. Yeah. I didn't know what to do on that one. He said he didn't know what it was. I don't feel like touching that topic. Okay. All right, Ryan, Kyle, fan for a while. I hope I didn't read the wrong one. Life advice question is a bit different than the typical, is she the one or did I make the right career choice questions you've been getting? And unfortunately, I'm not sitting on eight figures in the bank. Eight-figure shout out. It's unbelievable. I haven't encountered that problem yet. Well, let us know if you do. I have something that I've struggled with and was guess it's something common among your listeners. I'm in my late 20s. My job and money situations are good, which I'm especially grateful for in the pandemic. Shout out to self-reflection. I got married a couple years ago. And my wife and I are both happy in a relationship. All right. What's the problem? Why are you emailing us, buddy? My problem is I don't really have many friends. I have a group of guys from college that I talk with regularly, but they're spread across the country and Zoom isn't quite the same as meeting up with a buddy at a bar or backyard or some socially distanced drinks. I recently moved from one major East Coast city to another and haven't made any new friends. It's easy to blame the pandemic for that, but in the last place I lived, I also didn't make any good friends and I was there for 5 years. I think I'm a pretty likable and easy to get along with guy, and I'm sure that those who know me would characterize me as a good friend. I'm definitely the more introverted side and have trouble putting myself out there. In my last city, I tried playing in a few sports leagues, but nothing ever got deeper than grabbing a beer after the game. Do you have any advice on how to make friends when you move to a new area? Okay. Very, very good question, because this is why I wanted to start not Raya, the dating website for rich dudes, but Gaia, where it was just a friendship site for dudes that wanted to meet other dudes in a non-romantic way. It was just, hey, do you like hockey? Yeah, I like hockey. Do you like beer? Sometimes way too much. Okay. Well, I'm Dave. Nice to meet you, Dave. Okay, but Colin, before we go too deep into what your issues may be, because you may have some, you may not have any. You may be a really nice guy and everybody's missing out. But when you said two Northeast cities, I think that's your problem, okay? As somebody who's from that world, I didn't meet anyone new, nor did I care to ever meet anybody new. Like, if you weren't with me by 20, I didn't. And the thing that sucks is people liked me, and I still was just like, what am I going to text a new guy something? I didn't even want guys texting me when texts first started happening, which is weird. But I just was bad at it. I was bad at it, and I worked nonstop. And when you work nonstop and you don't have any money, really, when all my guys are doing stuff, I couldn't really do any stuff with those guys. So that was kind of on me. But I think the Northeast part of this is part of your problem. If you lived in, say, Chicago, this wouldn't be as big of an issue. I don't know, as a transplanted Yankee in the South, how well that would go over. I get treated well in the South, but I think that's because I had a radio show for 15 years. California, the anti-Cali, some people are really anti-Cali guys. I think the northern Cali guy, though, is taking over for Southern California guy, because San Francisco Bay Area tech guys way worse than lifestyle Southern California guy. That's kind of, you know, at least like the worst versions of each other. Is, you know, my friends in the Northeast were like, oh, LA guys suck. And you're like, well, first of all, LA is a big place. It's like saying, well, New England is kind of the same, but well, look, guy from Vermont is different than a guy from Providence, but you know, I think it has way more to do with the Northeast than it is you. Okay, so now here's the other problem. You brought up another thing. One of my other tenets here is that if you move thinking everything's going to be different, but you're the same, nothing's going to be different. I've done it. I'm like, man, I can't wait to move and everything's going to be different. And like a year in, you're like, yeah, you're pretty much the same guy. You just moved and have nicer furniture. So I think it's the Northeast. Now, maybe you suck. Let's be honest. But if your wife likes you and you're successful, that doesn't mean your personality is great. Like, do you have zero good stories? I remember when I first got into the mainstream of people working at a desk job, I would tell college stories and those stories were way too good. And they were like, this guy sucks. Like some of these stories can't be true. And they're all true, but they were also sometimes like not the most, right, look, give me a break. I was 26. Maybe they weren't the right stories for the setting. So that was a bit of a turnoff. I also like being by myself, clearly, more than others. And maybe you don't like being by yourself, or maybe you do and you think you want to meet friends, but you end up making decisions that subconsciously are always steering you towards being by yourself. So if you don't suck to be around, okay, let's cover a couple other things. Are you a bad drunk? Doesn't sound like it. I don't know. If you hit on anybody's wife, like, it doesn't sound like you're this guy that shows up and is an absolute social tornado who you're like, ah. God, like people are looking at their watch wondering when the hinges are going to come off some guy. Let's think, what else could it possibly be? I mean, you and your wife could be on the nerdy side. I don't know. I mean, these are questions you're going to have.
Does your wife have friends?
Yeah, does your wife have friends? Good job, Kyle, jumping in there. And I'm not doing this to be harsh. I'm doing it to get to the root of the problem. It is, what, like, are your other friends, do other people invite you on vacations when the world was normal? Are all your friends people that you only met like pre-college or in college and then after? Because again, this is not somebody who has made a ton of friends after the fact, but I know that I can make friends if I want to. I've met people in LA. I just don't always do much because, you know, I'm over here creating. but it's just, these are things you really got to ask yourself, but it's kind of tough because most, you have the self-awareness to send the email, which makes me think you have the self-awareness that you would have known if you had these terrible personality traits. So, Colin, honestly, I think I'm going to chalk it up to what the beginning was. You're in the worst part of the country to make new friends once you become an adult. My friends and I, we lived in Boston. We made jokes about that. Be like, oh, how'd you meet that guy? Be like, oh, I met him. Be like, you have a new friend after 30? Like, what are you, a fucking psychopath? And that was just a Northeast thing. So I think that's your problem. All right. Enjoy that. Might want to share that pod part with the wife. Okay, banging these out here. Ooh, this guy's a real aristocrat here. Okay, Matt's going bald. Love the show, favorite podcast every week. Previous question about tattoos made me realize you're an expert on a similar aesthetic dilemma. I don't think I'm a tattoo expert. Okay, how do you handle the young receding hairline? I've watched it happen to many of my peers. I'm 26 too and finally have a bald spot developing. That's right when mine started, Matt. I can cover it for now. Many people have sincerely expressed to me that they can't tell I'm balding. Yeah, that's what my mom said and my hairdresser that was trying to sleep with me. I was like, I think my hair's falling out. She's like, no, you're fine. I was like, no, I'm not. Liar. All right, but it's happening. Would be less worried if I was married or in a serious relationship, but that seems to be imminent. How long do you hold on before you're going to commit to the shaved look? When you do, what else do you do to keep the young vibe going? Hats, steroids, motorcycles, sunglasses, what's the play? Would love a financial advice interview podcast at some point. Hey, I would love to do it too. Some of you finance dickheads will not be afraid to get really upset when I talk about finance, because financial social media might be as unlikable as any lane possible. I've said repeatedly, I know I don't have that much depth to it. I just know when somebody else has no depth, i.e. Kaepernick and the Nike stock debate, where everybody looked dumb on that one. So I would love to have, I wanted to have David Faber on, but I followed him. I tweeted at him once, but I'm not going to be some weirdo just tweeting at David Faber, asking him to come on the podcast. That's kind of who I wanted to go with. There were some other guys that I looked into, but they looked a little too self-promoting for me, where I just don't want to hear about all the sick angel investments you made. I want to talk about real guys that don't have a ton of cash. I want to put together a plan, stuff I wish I'd been taught in high school or college. Like, I can't believe there's not just one mandatory, like, hey, here's how to not fuck up your financial future the next 10 years course. Word. Like, what's so wrong with that? It would make the most sense. People think that I'm obsessed with money. No, I just want to know how to do it better because I did it wrong for a long time. And the quicker you learn this shit, the better off you would be. But for whatever reason, in this country, maybe that's the whole point, is we don't want to teach it so everybody makes credit card mistakes, so everybody is in debt and the banks make money off of us. All right, Joe Rogan style, just went conspiracy on you. That was off the top of my head. So back to Matt and his hair that sucks. All right. I was fucking furious when I found out about it. Furious. And I didn't know what to do. Luckily, you know, it's 6'2". That's a slight advantage of being balder. But I only had like the spot. And then finally, I was just so sick of it. Sick of Van Pelt's looks every time he caught at a bad angle. And I didn't work out because I was balding. I just like putting myself through some sort of physical exertion that is painful. And then I feel like I'm right for the day. So that's really what I do. But it wasn't because I was balding. But it definitely helps if you're going to be jacked and bald and tall as opposed to skinny fat, 5'8 and bald. You know, who are we kidding? So shout out to the 5'8 skinny fat ball guys. Listen to the pod. But I think even you would have to admit that you're not favored in this matchup. So you're going to have to invent an app and then it's bottle service time, right? So the Propecia thing, I don't know where we are with this drug or where the side effects were. I apologize if I've told this story before, but when I first got insurance, finally health insurance in Massachusetts, and then, wait a minute, I don't even think I had it yet. Oh, that's right. They passed a law where you had to sign up for it, and I didn't because I couldn't afford it. And I went to a doctor because I wanted to start training to get my ass kicked in Muay Thai, and I had some injury, and I was like, hey, can you look at this injury? And the guy's like, yeah, whatever. It's a strain. You'll be fine. I was like, while we're here, doc, can I get a bottle of Propecia and prescriptions because I'm starting to get a little thin up top? And he just looked at me, was like, no. He just said no. He just looked at me and said no. Like, do you realize what I may have done? I might have been hosting Dancing with the Fucking Stars if I was this size with a full head of hair, this hot and smooth on television. Jesus Christ, game over. But instead, I had to choose a different path because this asshole wouldn't prescribe me Propecia in my late 20s. But all my friends that took it before things went too bad, it worked out. Now, that drug could be banned. Can we get IT on that, Kyle? Okay. Can you ask them? I don't even know if it's banned. Some guys, that's right. I have told the story once before because one of my friends said, like, hey, I don't think you should take Propecia to the other guy. And the other guy was like, well, if I'm bald, I'd want to be dead anyway. And we were like, whoa, that was pretty heavy. So I don't know your size. The hat thing you can pull off because everybody's wearing hats all the time. But the thing that sucks about wearing a hat if you're talking to a new girl and your hair sucks is that moment you have to take off the hat, It's even worse than when she just sees you originally. So be funny, be successful, maybe a motorcycle, start doing some curls. Don't be hat guy every day. I wear a hat a lot just because I like it. People at this point are fairly aware the hair thing isn't working out. But we had another emailer that was sent to me from Kyle too that was also saying, I love my girlfriend. She's really hot. She's out of my league and I'm losing my hair. Should I just marry her now because I'm going to be disgusting older on?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And first of all, it was kind of like this thing where you're admitting she's out of your league and she's really hot and you like her, and yet you're already toying with the idea of these other opportunities that you may have. And that's the thing. It's like sometimes it doesn't matter who the girl is. You just aren't ready. You're just not ready. You're not emotionally stable enough to be with that one person and go, okay, this is the serious version of all of this stuff. But I did have a friend that was like, how come? I was like, well, that came out of nowhere. He's like, yeah, I figured she'd be the hottest girl I'd ever be able to marry because my hair's falling out. So I wanted to lock it up now. Straight face. I'm like, so are you in love? He's like, we get along, you know?
Christ.
He's like, but he goes, if I waited another 2 years, he's like, I'd never be able to get her. I'm like, all right. Cool. So sometimes the harshest stuff is the realest stuff. So look, I just told you a bunch of stuff there, Matt. You pick through it, sort through it, whatever helps. There's going to be a lot of that didn't. All right, everybody have a great weekend. Bill and I are going to be back on Sundays as we are throughout the NBA. And please subscribe, rate, and review, and be on the lookout. We have a massive guest beginning next week, somebody I'm so excited to work with. So tell everybody and make sure you're subscribed to this podcast so that you get that as soon as it comes out. I promise you it'll be one of the biggest guests we've ever had on the Ryan Russillo podcast. So talk to you next week.